Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed, so I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and here with me, as usual, are my co-hosts, Tom Gould and Melissa Gould.
Hey, Bob.
Hello, how are you?
As you know,
this is the show where we address questions that you either email to us, or we certainly hope that you'll call in during the show. The number here is 888-627-6008. And we'd love to hear from you. Just give us a call. You could ask a question that we could pose to our illustrious panel, or you can share personal experience that you've had. And once again, the number here is 888-627-6008. So let's get right into it. There are some questions here that people have written in. Here's one that says, how do the spirits on the other side look like? How do we ask them questions about their death, like what happened to them and how they passed and if it was sudden? Well, the first part of the question, I think we're probably in agreement that spirits can look like whatever they want to look like. You know, they're an entity of thought and energy, and if they want to look like they looked, if they feel better about projecting a body, they can project a body. And we also know that they often appear to loved ones in the physical at an age where they felt the best about themselves. So usually an older person that, you know, died when they were elderly might appear to a loved one in their 30s, you know, when they were, you know, young and beautiful. So there's no rhyme or reason to it, right? I mean, the other thing, how do we ask them about their death and, you know, like what happened to them and how they passed? Well, that's what mediums do, right? I mean, it might be difficult for somebody to do it on their own, but that's how they let mediums know that they still exist, by giving them information like that.
Yeah, in fact, the mediums who study at the Arthur Findlay College in England are taught that that is the first thing that they do when they do a reading, is to establish the cause of death and that sort of thing, just to connect quicker with the sitter.
That's right. It's Janet Nohavik, who, it was just 2 years ago that we lost her to the other side. She would demand name, rank, and serial number, which, of course, equated to identify yourself through your name, your work, what you did, how you passed, all of that.
I was just thinking about that just before you said it, name, rank, and serial number. I was wondering where I heard that before you, but you just answered the question. Here's one, and I'm going to let Tom feel this one. Okay. My name is Kate, and I have a question about the afterlife and soul planning. I was wondering, since I've heard that we plan our lives before we get here, while we are in the beauty and peace of heaven, doesn't it seem unfair that if we choose difficult lives for the purpose of making spiritual progress in heaven, don't we, while we're in that planning process surrounded by love, joy, and peace, lose perspective on the depth of the trauma this suffering will cause because these plans were made under the ease and influence of heaven and not the reality of the earthly realm? That's a long sentence. then she goes on, do we really know how devastating these plans were to our hearts and souls? So, you know, I understand the question, you know, really is, so we're making this choice to come back to the physical world and maybe lead this life of hardship. But how can we recognize the hardship if we're surrounded by love and peace and compassion, right?
I think there is something to that, because, I mean, we've all experienced things where we are offered to try something and we say, oh, yeah, sure, and then we try and go, whoa, I don't think I would do that again. So there may be an element of that. The only thing that I take issue was the statement about doing damage to our heart and soul. And yeah, we get a trauma to our heart, which I know very well, but it's not damaging your soul, but it's enhancing your soul to go through this. It doesn't feel like it at the time, but that is exactly why we come back to this this realm, which seems to have more hardship than not. I don't know if that totally answers the question, but I think that's the direction that, yes, you do know it's going to be hard. And as Kennedy says, you know, we're going to go to the moon, not because it's easy, but because it's hard. Well, we came back here to this planet, not because it was going to be easy, but because it was going to be hard. And
So do you think, so even though we're in this realm of, you know, of love and peace and so forth, we're still part of a greater soul, right? I mean, so we're many fragments. So we still always have that recognition of what we need. I guess, right?
Yes, and you know, and then to extend the metaphor a little bit, that you and the question was, well, if you're up there in the spiritual world in the heavenly environment with love and that and it's beautiful and wonderful, why do we come back here then if it's so wonderful? Why do we come back to hardship? And I'd say, well, why do you go to the gym? If you're sitting on your couch and you're enjoying television and it's you're very comfortable, why get up and strain your body with exercise? And the answer, of course, is that you improve your body. Well, why do we come to the earth for hardship and a hard time? Because it enhances our soul.
You know, and a little bit of a spoiler alert, a lot of this will be answered in the next few months when a book comes out by our own FFF-certified medium, Connie Fusella. So we can look forward to hearing Connie's explanation about that.
Yeah, I always thought that, you know, that was always the toughest thing for me to accept or understand, you know, when it comes to your reincarnation, was that it would be nice to know up front what you need to learn, you know, because we have no memory of our past life, you know, for the most part, you know, when we come back, or if we do have some memories, it dissipates fairly quickly. So, so that was always the argument, like you said, was why would somebody come back, you know, to that life of trauma? But there's a reason that the greater oversoul knows that their, you know, earthly existence doesn't recognize. Let's see. Here's one. I've heard it said that when we pass over, we will be greeted by family and loved ones. I wondered if this refers to our soul family or earth family, or could it be either? My daughter passed before any other family members that she knew, except her father's mother, who died when she was a toddler. I often wondered who would have greeted her, if anyone. Obviously, I don't want her to be alone. I also wondered if a medium who has made a connection can ask and receive answers to the questions such as these, like, I long to know who she's with and what she's doing. was also wondering if it likely takes more skill for a medium to be able to get answers to these kinds of questions, and maybe also the loved one needs to be able to communicate the answers. And she also says, so how can I find the appropriate medium? Well, the first part, we all believe to be true that we are greeted by family and loved ones. And I've also, you know, come to understand somebody that really didn't know, like a child, you know, many of their loved ones may be greeted by others that are assigned, you know, or given the job of fostering love and understanding with these children. In other words, it may not be an immediate family member. It could have been somebody that you didn't know in the earthly existence, but yet their job is just to take care of young ones and make sure they get acclimated and grow.
That's what I was thinking, because I know parents do worry that their child was so young and might not recognize the elderly relatives or that went before them. But
right,
that all drops away. It's that soul to soul thing. Age doesn't seem to be a factor, and there'll be that heart connection that they recognize one another. So it will be, it should not be a concern or a worry of parents.
Yeah. And we also hear, I mean, the other part of the question is in readings, very often that is something that's communicated from the person in spirit, you know, that I am with dad, or I am with, you know, our dog, or I'm with, you know, our child. So that does, you know, come through as evidence. Of course, it's evidence that we can't verify.
Right.
Oh. And because, you know, so, I mean, we would like to think that's true, but we don't really know for sure, you know. So, you know, that's why they give so much of the other type of evidence that we can identify and verify. So, does it take more skill for a medium to get these kinds of answers? Well, the more skillful the medium generally, the more specific the evidence is going to be. So, you know, any evidential medium should be able to get that the answers to those questions. But a lot of people are under the impression that they can ask a specific question, you know, and then get an immediate response. And it doesn't always work that way. You know, sometimes I guess it can, but more often it's spirit that initiates the answers, you know, to any evidence, right?
We wish it was that easy.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, there was another part to that question where they said, you know, the if the person who passes before any immediate family members and perhaps before grandparents as well, that there is on the other side, I've read about soul groups, mm-hmm. that you, if you don't know somebody specifically, you would be drawn to people of a similar soul group, like doctors would go to doctors, musicians would go to musicians, and that sort of thing. And the bottom line from, there was a book called Testimony of Light, who's there are spirits that are there specifically to greet people coming over. We hear it in the near-death experiences that they're greeted by someone, not necessarily someone they know, who will say, you know, it's not your time, you have to go back. But if it is your time, then that same spirit is there to help you acclimate to the new surroundings.
Well, here's an interesting question. Do people who know that there is life after physical death live their lives differently than those who don't believe?
Absolutely.
I hate to say it. I'm always the one, you know, when somebody so negatively and vehemently says there's no such thing and doesn't want to believe it, I feel they have something that they don't want to re-encounter on the other side, and they're praying that it isn't true because they don't want to be held accountable for the way they lived their lives here.
So what you're saying is that the people who know that there's life after physical death live their lives differently only if they believe that the way they conduct themselves in the physical world affect their next life.
I don't know if I'd say only.
Well, but I'm saying if you don't believe that, you know, what's the incentive to live a good life, you know, if you don't believe that your place in the future realms will be based upon the way you lived? I mean, religion preaches that as well, you know, I understand, but I often wonder about the people who don't believe in God or don't believe in life after death at all, and they believe, you know, death is final. You know, why wouldn't they go out and rape and pillage and rob and steal? And, you know, because they figured, what the hell? It's just a short ride and might as well do whatever I want.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people do live that way.
But when you say do whatever you want, hopefully not a lot of people want to do that.
No.
They want to be good and kind and moral. But then those who don't...
And I understand that there are people that don't believe, you know, in an afterlife, you know, or God or anything, you know, religious, but they still are good people when they believe that a purpose on earth is to, you know, help others. It doesn't necessarily have to be tied to, you know, religion or the afterlife.
That's true. I mean, because helping others is a reward unto itself. You feel so good that you do that.
Right.
I will address that in the sense that having had a few surgeries, a couple of very major surgeries, due to my belief system in this, I did not have a fear of dying or anxiety about not coming out of the operation. I'm more going into the operating room, I did the meditation and surrounded myself with a white light and then took whatever means, you know, whatever was going to happen. I knew I was going to come out on the other side. In fact, I'd recently had heart surgery, and in the post-op with the doctor, he said, you know, after the surgery, you were so chill. Most people aren't chill. And I said, well, you know, I was going with the flow. Whatever was going to happen was going to happen. And I did not have the fear of passing over.
Mm-hmm. So that's what it takes for you, Tom, a life-threatening surgery to make you chill.
Pretty much. I mean, I'm not dead. They hit me over the head with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was great, you know, and obviously your beliefs affected the way you approached, you know, those things. And I can understand how other people would be frantic, you know, and want to ask a million questions, but there was nothing you were going to do that was going to change the situation, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and everybody kindly would say, oh, and Melissa, you must have been scared to death. You're so worried. And I had to honestly say no. There was no part of anything that he went through that had me concerned. I don't know why. I just had this complete faith, I guess, that it didn't even cross my mind that something.
Yeah. Well, you know, throwing that huge party while he was in recovery may not have been the best idea, but... Yeah. Well, but you also, you know, along those lines, I mean, you must have had a good feeling about it, and you knew it was going to be a positive outcome, right?
Yeah. I did.
She definitely has psychic abilities, you know, enough to, I think, to realize if something bad was going to happen, you would have gotten that.
I know. So if we ever go in for surgery and Melissa gives us a thumbs down,
I say
Do you
bye.
want to know if I'm having those feelings? Would you like me to tell you?
No, absolutely not. Lie your face off. This is a good one. Do you have instant knowledge and memories of all the lives you've lived once you cross over?
Well, we've
I don't
heard
know.
talk of some of that, but all of them, I don't know. Instantly, was that part of it?
Yeah, do you have instant knowledge and memories of
Life
all of
review must be the instant part.
Yeah, but it only reviews this life.
Right.
Right. It doesn't go back. I mean,
But might, we don't
it
know.
might, because I mean, if you have the ability to do a past life regression while you're here in the physical, I would assume that you could do that on the other side as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, so as Tom said, we have a life review. It's reviewing this last incarnation. I wonder, when we step into the other side, whether there's possibly another review where all of our lives are flashed behind, our past lives are flashed in front of us, and it's just for that brief period, when we step in there, we have the instant knowledge. And maybe after that, we just lose some of those, memories, but we're given all that download of information.
Very
Ability.
likely. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I take a little issue again with the word instantly. I think that we all figure, oh, once we pass, then we'll have the all be the all knowing. But I get the feeling from the evidence that we have seen and read about that it's still part of the growth process, that when you cross out of the physical world into the spiritual world, there's still more to learn, and you can hone other skills. One being The big one being to be able to communicate back to the people left to here on Earth, that some spirit can do it quickly and easily, and others take a while before they're actually able to communicate. So there are levels of growth still.
yeah, I would agree. And also, I mean, I've mentioned this before, but say it again, when we pass, especially if we didn't believe that there was life after death, there has to be a period of I don't know if I call it confusion, but it must take a little bit of time to get used to. It's like all of a sudden getting gills and breathing underwater. It's like, yeah, I agree. Probably not a lot of things are instant,
And there, it's pretty rare. I haven't read a, seen a lot of this, but that sometimes you don't realize that you've even died. That you're in a, and if you don't know about the afterlife, it'll, as you say, be very confusing. That, wait a minute, how come I just was in an accident and yet I'm standing on the side of the road watching the EMTs show up?
Right.
That's interesting. That was the gist of a story I recently read. I think it was in the New Yorker magazine, and again, fiction, but the story was that a fellow worked with the diplomatic part of France, and an American woman visiting France had passed away unexpectedly at a dinner party, and it was his job to locate and notify her family back home and make sure the body was shipped back home to family. And the daughter, the adult daughter of the woman who passed, asked if he or someone he knew could sit with her mother's body in the morgue, because she must likely be very confused over what had happened to her. And he had a little difficulty understanding, you mean your dead mom is going to be confused? But, you know, it falls right in line with the way we think.
Right.
So it was somebody else's take on this whole thing.
And you're listening to The Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. If you want to talk to us, the number here is 888-627-6008. And if, let's see, what if the person that has passed didn't speak English? Can a medium still communicate with them?
It's all about the thoughts, right?
Yeah, I'd say yes, because a lot of times mediums are not getting, they're not having a conversation necessarily. It's not coming through in words. A lot of mediums that I've seen will talk about that they have certain symbols, like a yellow rose will mean one thing to them, a green rose, or, you know, somebody in a uniform will suggest their things like that. So a lot of the communication is done with symbols and not words.
Right. And like Melissa said, it's thought language, you know. I mean, the medium, you know, then converts the thoughts into his or her own language, right? So it's language is immaterial, you know.
I'll bet a lot of pet owners are excited about that, to communicate.
Yes, absolutely.
Animals.
I smile at this one. We hear from near-death experiencers that people often are given a choice whether to return to the physical world or not. What happens if you choose to return and then you change your mind?
I bet you have another NDE.
It's one of those things that is like, there's no going back, you know, at least not right away, you know. So you can't just say, oh, sorry, whoops.
Well, I guess the answer to that is you don't know that you where you came from at that stage.
Oh.
I mean, you come over as a child, you don't think, oh, I want to get back in the womb. Of course.
Oh, that's good.
Of course, I mean, teenage boys have been trying to do that for years.
Well, at least once a show, you get Melissa to shake her head. That was it. I had a medium tell me that she uses remote viewing to communicate with spirit. How would that work? I don't know how that would work. You know, I mean, we think of remote viewing as a physical sight, you know, visiting a physical place, you know, locating a physical place, as opposed to, you know, communicating with spirit. But theoretically, I don't know. I guess it's possible. What if you sent your consciousness or your mind to, you know, a discarnate entity? Question is, I mean, in remote viewing, like we know that they used to give remote viewers, you know, coordinates, right? Like latitude. Well, I don't know. You can't give coordinates of somebody in another dimension, but we don't know how all this stuff works. I mean, who am I to say that you can't use remote viewing to locate somebody in spirit?
I know, it's kind of reminding me of when they use mediums or psychics in solving, you know, murders or taking them back to the scene of the crime, and they were never physically there, but they're able to tune in to, I'm seeing a lake and to the left there's a driveway, and they're not there and they've never been there, but it's kind of remote viewing to explain what they're seeing.
Yeah, the only thing I can add to that is I have not heard any anecdotes of people trying to remote view and instead of going to a coordinate, end up face to face with a discarnate. However, I imagine that it's all kind of based on a meditation, that you meditate in some way to get to the remote viewing at, or astral projection as you would meditate if you're going to communicate with spirit. So it's possible that, I mean, one meditation can cover all grounds if, as you mentioned, you set out the intention. I would love to hear if anybody's able to do that. That's a new one for us.
Yeah, well, next time one of the mediums puts that on their application for certification, we'll question it.
Yes.
Are psychics more popular than mediums?
You know, I think people still get confused about the differences. Do you want to tell us the differences, Tom, between psychic mediums?
Well, yeah, and popular, I think they're more plentiful. I think there are more psychics than there are mediums. And there are certainly more fraudulent psychics out there than you can shake a stick at. And again, yeah, and from what our mediums, you know, it's the old, all mediums are psychics, but not all psychics are mediums. And a medium will say if they're getting psychic information, they're kind of getting it from the person that's sitting in front of them through their aura or something like that. And they can tell that the information they're getting is coming there. Whereas if they're doing a mediumistic reading, they get their information from a different place. It comes in differently. It appears differently to them. It feels different. So it's, and then of course they can tell information that that no one else could know. So it's.
Yeah. And then it, of course it gets more complicated because most mediums call themselves psychic mediums, you know? Yes. So, you know, that's you know, which kind of confuses some people, but I think you described it right. And I think there are a lot of people in the public don't recognize the difference, as you said, Melissa, but I think there are physically more psychics in the world than there are mediums. And you know, and the reason it's so subject to fraud is that there's no way of identifying whether it's true or not, until you wait, you know, until you hang up the phone and pay your money, right?
Yeah, there were one of those advertisements, probably on television. If it's not the best psychic reading you ever got, you get your money back. Well, you don't even know if. Maybe they tell you a bunch of wonderful, positive things, and you buy it, and you go, "Yeah, that was the best." But of course, none of it may come true. Yeah.
It makes people feel good, bottom line, right?
Yeah.
Now, let's take a call. We have Holly on the line. Hi, Holly.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Holly.
Can you hear me?
Yes, you can.
My question is, for a medium reading, is it as accurate if it's done over a phone call or a Zoom call than if it's in live?
Yeah, I mean, it is, because, you know, think about it, you know, mediums are communicating to another dimension. So what difference does physical proximity make? You know, I mean, the information is going to be the same, you know, whether they're sitting right in front of you or they're on the other end of the world. And researchers that study mediumship prefer when, you know, the medium and the sitter don't see each other, because it eliminates the possibility of getting, you know, visual or, you know, clues from the sitter, you know, like sizing up how old they are or where they're from and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, we have always found, I mean, we conduct our medium evaluation certification process using, Zoom, you know, because, you know, and we used to do it back in the day in the physical one-on-one, you know, and there's no difference in the proficiency or the data. I mean, it's pretty much exactly the same. So I guess to answer your question, it, you know, it doesn't make a difference you know, where they are, whether it's on the phone or, you know, whether it's person to person.
Yeah, if you think about it,
the medium
is kind of like a phone booth, and it's spirit that wants to get you a message and sees that you're sitting with a medium, or you're on the phone with a medium, or on Zoom with a medium, and it's spirit who goes, ah, the medium can understand me, and they can give the message to my loved one. So it's spirit taking advantage of having a conduit to communicate with you.
And Holly, also, if you do have this opportunity for a reading in this way, make sure that you either record it or the medium that you're sitting with, communicating with, records it and gives you a copy, because that's very important. They should always allow that. And often in the moment, it's exciting or nerve-wracking, and you forget a lot, but then afterwards, oh, that makes sense now. So it's extremely important to be able to have a recording to listen back to.
And most everybody's phone these days has a voice recorder. So when you sit down with a medium, you start that recorder. And Melissa's absolutely right. I've had mediums, and I've had many readings, but I'll sit in a reading and somebody comes through that I didn't expect, and I'll sit there and go, well, no, I guess I maybe, and then 3 days later I go, oh, that's who that was. So it really does help to record these. And then you listen to them years later and you see just how accurate some of them can be.
I'm new to this, and I'm finding that a lot of, when I research, a lot of mediums say recording is not allowed.
Ooh.
So I'll make sure that I record.
Yeah. I mean, we always think of that as they're just trying to cover up their own inabilities, you know, by telling them, you know, they don't want evidence of a bad reading. But I mean, it is true that sometimes when a medium is working, they can affect, you know, electrical, you know, apparatus, but that's no excuse for not allowing you to record it, you know. So we think that any reputable medium should allow you to record it. And if they don't, then I will. Their services.
Yeah, if it's possible, when you schedule a reading, find out before you pay your money if you're going to be allowed to record it.
Yes, and I guess
thank you for that
time to mention that if you want to get a reputable medium, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and we have all of our certified mediums, and their contact information is on that website. And we have, as Bob mentioned before, we do a medium certification process that is very stringent and not easy to pass. In fact, maybe 15% of everybody who has tried to pass our program have passed. So there are a lot of mediums out there, not to say that they're frauds or anything, because somebody, you know, now that I'm on this radio show, I don't do the medium certification because I'm recognized, but I used to do it. And everybody who tries for the medium certification have some sort of ability, and you feel for them because you want them to succeed. Of course, we want to build up our lists of mediums, but you can tell that they're just not quite there. And I always tell the other sitters who are going to participate in that is, you know, when you're grieving and really hurting, if you go to a medium that's not good, it can do more harm than good. And so I ask a sitter who might feel as I do and feel kindly towards the applicant and want them to do well, but I in the back of your head is, would you recommend them putting down a couple of $100 to see this person if you're really hurting? And that usually gives you the perspective to say, no, we want our mediums to be spot on.
Well, thanks for calling, Holly.
Thank you so much. And I'll continue my research on your website. It's filled with information.
Okay. Great. And call us back if you do have a successful reading. We'd love to hear your results.
Okay. Do you think that there are those in the next world who were never in the physical world?
Yes.
I do.
People often talk about angels as being spirit beings that were never in the physical. They talk about spirit guides. Everybody apparently has a spirit guide, but perhaps they could have been in the physical as well. But
it could be.
But in the answer is yes, there are spiritual beings that have never been in human form.
I love how we answer so definitively. I mean, it's how we really believe in our hearts. That's the best we can do.
I mean, Bob particularly has read thousands of books on the subject. I have read probably hundreds of books on the subject. And there are universal themes. When you talk to a medium, when you read a book by a scientist, when you see some accounts of near-death experiences and things like that and reincarnation, that there's just so much evidence that you can hone down the strands of truth. And I believe after 20 years of being totally immersed in this and studying it, that I am confident in a lot of the answers I give.
What we don't know is, you know, for instance, like where did an angel come from? I mean, that's subject to debate, but you know, I mean, there very well could be.
Yes, that's why we have our very dear friend Liz, who investigates all this thoroughly. We'll have to pick her brain about this one.
Yeah. Do you think that those in the next world dream?
Wow. Ooh. Oh, wow, that's a great question.
So if they're all beings of thought,
yeah,
and dreams,
yeah,
to me are thoughts, but then if I'm only a being of thought, I'm existing in a dream world, so I'll have a dream in my dream?
All right. Well, I like the way you're trying to figure it out as you're speaking, right? Yeah, because that's an interesting question. I mean, we dream when we sleep, right? So there's no sleeping in
daydream.
So it could be a daydream, but very often our dreams here in the physical world are our brains rehashing things that happen to us. But we don't have a mind, but we don't have a brain. You know, we're pure consciousness, and why need to dream? Because we could create anything that we want.
And a lot of people, their only communication with the other side is through a dream visit. If one of your loved ones visits you in a dream and you have a visitation dream, it's very vivid and you remember it for years and years and years. I do think that when you are dreaming, you are closer to the spiritual world than to this world.
That makes sense to me.
Right. And we've talked also how the physical world may be the dream world.
Yeah.
And the next world is the real world, right?
I know, that's what I've often thrown out. David Johansen has a radio show, and one of his quotes that I like is there an afterlife, and is this it?
Yeah, right. That's right. How do we know that this isn't the afterlife? All right, how about this? Assuming that there is sentient life throughout the universe, would an entity from another planet transition to the same afterlife that we do?
Say that an entity.
Okay, so like, let's say you live on another planet, and you physically die. Are you in the same we call the afterlife realm? That do they go where we are, or do they have their own afterlife?
It'd be an energy field, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's the energy of the universe is one energy. So when you shed your body, you become part of that energy. And not only part of it, we're all part of the same energy. That's you know why there's connections
right
with one another. So I would say yes. However, what we were talking about before, talking about soul groups, where you go with your soul group. So there are probably facets of this energy that, you know, you're over here as I'm over here as a musician, and then there's aliens over here in this soul group.
Oh, am I with the aliens?
You're probably with the aliens, I'm sure.
Well, we know I am.
I'll see you there, Bob.
Yeah, that's an inside joke. But I think of it also how we always talk about human beings ever reincarnate into birds, you know, or, you know, whatever. And
squirrels.
You know, yeah. So, I mean, the explanation is that it's kind of different levels of consciousness. So there's squirrel consciousness and there's human consciousness, and they're a different energy, as Tom alluded to. So they're not, you know, exactly in the same place. Maybe that's the same with extraterrestrials, you know, that they're, you know, there's an ET consciousness, you know, so maybe it is all the same so-called afterlife, but with a different vibration and frequency. Who knows? It's the only way I can think of it.
I think there was a book, I think it was called Billy Fingers or something like that.
Yeah.
And where this woman who was writing the book, brother passed and was able to communicate, channel with to her through her and to write this book. And I do remember distinctly at one point he goes, yeah, I'm thinking of reincarnating, only this time I'm going to come back as a tree in the forest and just hang out in the forest. So I have a feeling that your life energy could come back as any living being, a dog, a cat, a squirrel, a tree. I believe that's possible. Again, I'm not 100% confident with that answer, but that's where I'm leaning.
Well, just in case you do come back as a tree, I will not take any dogs near your tree.
But I'll hug you. I'll be your number one tree.
There you go. How can I go wrong?
Yeah. Okay. Another thought one. It's believed that we take our memories and personalities with us to the other side. We know that personalities often clash and cause confrontations. So why should we believe that that doesn't happen in the afterlife?
Probably will happen in the afterlife.
You think?
Other than the fact that I believe confrontation and clashes are ego-driven. Mm-hmm. And when you leave this physical world, you leave the ego behind. And I base that on the readings I've seen where a sitter, and I've seen this a lot, a sitter will sit there, let's just say a young woman, and, I've got a man coming through, oh, it's your father, and she's like, I don't want to talk to this person because he was an abusive guy when he was here, and I don't want to have anything to do with him, and the guy's coming through to apologize for being that abusive person. So I think when you get to the other side, you do, that's one of the things you learn is how to be more loving and compassionate.
But it's reminding me that I think there may be levels to transition through, because when you spoke about soul groups, from something I had read, I guess, again, in Testimony of Light. For me, it sort of, I hate to say it, sort of brings me comfort. It's kind of like when somebody on this human plane has been unkind and putting up a false facade, pretending to be a different sort of person. And many people fall for it. But if you know the person well enough, you know, no, underlying their motives and all that. And the only solace I could get was like, well, when you're on the other side, all's going to drop away and you're going to find yourself in the same group of people that you've, you know, been pretending you're not, but really you are. So maybe it's then the different levels, because yes, maybe it's all, you know, things happen in a blink of an eye. So maybe all of that happens all at once. Maybe you're in that soul group, you recognize your wrongs, you then come back through a medium and express yourself with, please forgive me, I was, you know, I'm different now, that was my ego, that's gone. Boy, that was just a whole bunch of thoughts all at once. Everything, all at once.
You know, stream of consciousness. But I think basically what we're saying, and I think, you know, Tom said it perfectly, is that the ego is the key. So yes, we have a personality minus the ego. Ego is what causes confrontation and conflict. Plus the fact that everybody's an open book. We communicate by thoughts. So everybody's hearing each other's thoughts. And so nobody can hide anything. Incentive, you know, for greed or, you know, unrest is not there anymore. So I think that's why we could still retain personalities, but, you know, without the ego. And that's why it's a peaceful place.
I hope so.
Yeah. We have time for, let's see, another one here. Do discarnate spirits ever know about future events? They wrote, you know, would this suggest that our conscious awareness has fewer limitations or is less filtered in the spirit realm as opposed to the physical realm? I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, whether or not, I mean, in medium readings, it is true that when a medium is bringing through a discarnate, they'll often say that the discarnate is telling me that this is going to happen to you in the future, you know. And of course, that's something that we can't score as evidence, but they do say that a lot. So I kind of think that they have a little bit more access to future precognitive kind of stuff, but not anything significant. I don't think that they all of a sudden they're imbued with this knowledge of everything that's going to happen. What do you think?
Well,
not everything, right? But certain things.
I hang my hat on that there is no time on the, you know, once it's quantum physics, when you're pure energy, and what Melissa alluded to there was everything happens all at once. Everything is at the same time. And, you know, our existence on this planet, it's linear. You know, you birth to death, you know, it's a man-made construct, a day, you know, a year, a month. And you don't have that on the other side. You have the ability that you can go to the 1700s and watch what's going on, or you can probably go to the 2525 and watch what's going on. Whether you can do that right away or you have to learn how to do that, I don't know. But I do believe that you do have some sense of things that are going to happen. I mean, there's the spirits who come through in a medium and say, well, there's the wedding coming up, I'm going to be there. I mean, sure, you see them planning for a wedding, but maybe they know already that of a wedding that hasn't been planned yet, and I'm going to be there. I don't know that.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time. Let's read our Global Peace Prayer, what it says, one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
And I'd like to say our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to accept it.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.